Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What do you need to know about chocolate? A great many of us already know how exquisite, really good chocolate can taste, but visitors to this weekend's DallasChocolate.org conference will also learn how and where chocolate is made, from bean to bar, how to navigate the sensory delights of your favorite chocolate shop, and how to taste chocolate with the sophistication of a connoisseur. My three guests this hour all will lead sessions at the conference. Chocolatier Kevin Wenzel is owner of the Wiseman House Chocolate Studio and Retail Store. David Collier is pastry chef at the Rosewood Mansion on Turtle Creek. And Adrian Newman is a chocolate educator, also known as the blogger Madame Coco. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
So we've all tasted the difference between premium chocolate and that stuff you buy at Halloween to give out to kids who come to your door. And we'll talk about craftsmanship in a minute. But what's the difference in terms of raw ingredients?
A lot of times it's the amount of sugar, quite simply. You can look at things as a difference between candy and chocolate. And
that's interesting.
Yeah, because a lot of times candy will have as much as 85% chocolate in it, where if you're really tasting chocolate to taste what it's all about, it's going to have a much lower percentage of sugar and a higher percentage of actual chocolate or cocoa.
So I can eat chocolate and not think of myself as eating candy?
Exactly.
Is that what you're telling me?
Exactly.
I like to hear that. What about the beans? Are they different from is there sort of a grading system for what you get?
Actually, a lot of chocolate makers look at it that way. We have some great chocolate makers in America today who go out to the farms across the world and look for beans that have qualities like a winemaker would look at grapes.
Is there a way to know that the chocolate that you're buying has been sustainably grown and that it's sort of fair trade? And there's been a lot of problems in Ivory Coast.
Yes, that's right. And there are a lot. If you go out to a supermarket today and you look at the chocolate that's on the shelves, many of them will highlight whether they're sustainably farmed or organic. But a lot of times that is used simply as a marketing tool. So I say, taste the chocolate, learn what you like, because chocolate comes from hundreds of thousands of farms across the world. And a lot of times those tiny farms can't afford for that sort of marketing or label as being sustainable or organic. So taste it, learn where it's coming from, and just try new things.
So talk for a minute about how you get these beans from a weird-looking tree that grows in tropical regions, and then we get the product that we know today. Because it's almost a miracle that anybody figured this out.
It is. It's an intense process. And who figured it out is probably still up for grabs on that argument. But chocolate's been around in the world. It dates all the way back to earliest traces in the archaeological record, 1200 BC, maybe even 1700 BC. And a long time ago, that was when they were making chocolate beer, actually, a fermented beverage, which sounds fun. No one's really doing that today. But the steps really happen at these farms or plantations around the world. A lot of important things that go into the flavor development of chocolate goes on at the farm. And so once the cacao pod is harvested from the tree.
It's about the size of a melon, right?
That's right. It kind of looks like a Nerf football. That's right. What I say. The beans that come out of that are fermented in their own pulp, and that process itself is very important. So the farmers that are watching that process, that's where all the flavor happens in that fermentation process. And after that, the beans are dried, which again locks in those flavors into the beans themselves. And then at that point, those beans are shipped somewhere where the maker actually takes it and takes it the other step in the process, which is roasting. And that's another element that gives it a lot of flavor. So there are many, many steps along the way. And those of you who are joining us on Saturday will get to learn more about all of those fun things that you never thought about go into making that chocolate in front of you.
So how far, Kevin and David, how far along in the process is chocolate when you receive it to make into the wonderful things that you make?
When I get it from Venezuela or Germany or Belgium, I can taste it, point, and it's melting in my mouth. And at that point, I will take it and mix it with local nuts, pecans, whipping cream, butter, and like truffles, blend it with the nuts, the roasted nuts. And that's the point where we get it at. And so the art comes in and tasting the chocolate, blending it with something that brings those nuances out, and getting it to an approachable, palatable bite of chocolate.
So you'll actually taste a batch that comes in from your exporters and say, you know, this would work better with raspberries than with nuts?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so the nuance is just like tasting wine, as Adrian was mentioning earlier. It's going to have all kinds of bouquet. It's going to have things going on in your mouth and aftertaste too. And so those elements, I want to balance those out, and I want to talk about that. And I don't want to have the chocolate competing with, say, raspberry. I want them to be like a good marriage where they're both speaking together and working out.
It's hard to believe that chocolate ever wouldn't succeed in a marriage.
It helps a lot, I'm sure.
What about for you?
I know when I get the chocolate, normally I get it from a certain, you know, from three or four different brands or purveyors. I enjoy, actually, the way I learned how to taste chocolate was, first you're going to break it, and you're going to smell it, and, you know, in the palms of your hand, so it's a little warm. And the first bite of chocolate I take, if I'm trying any kind of chocolate, I don't chew it as much as I just put it in my mouth and let it sit there for a while. And you can tell a lot about the chocolate when you do that, whether, you know, how quickly it melts and how bitter it is to start with and how it finishes. It's very much like wine or coffee. I think it has a lot in common with coffee, really. And I think that's really one of the reasons why chocolate and, you know, small batch chocolates and single origin chocolates and that kind of thing are really becoming more and more popular, as coffee has with Starbucks and, you know, that kind of thing, where everybody wants to, hey, I want to try this. I would like this more bitter. I know more American people tend to seem to like sweeter chocolates. There's a lot of people now that are becoming more adventurous and getting into the darker and bitter chocolates, which I tend to like chocolates around like a 60%. So they're semi-sweet, but they're towards the dark side. It's interesting because you'll meet a lot of people from other countries, let's say from Switzerland or Austria, and they like milk chocolate. And, you know, because that's what they grew up on and that's what they know, and they just have a different palate. So, yeah, it's all about, like Kevin said, you know, finding something that mixes and blends flavor-wise with the chocolate that you're actually using. So you can use whatever brand. I mean, I'm not really stuck on, I have to have this, I have to have Valrhona, I have to have Guittard. That's where for lack of a better term, that's where the skill and the palate of the person that's making them really comes into play. So,
well, I want to talk about texture here, because I don't really like the flavor of milk chocolate. It's my least favorite, but I like, but sometimes dark chocolate is sort of dry. Mm-hmm. And so talk about why that's the case.
I think a lot of, personally, and, you know, feel free to jump in. I think the darker the chocolate goes, you have a higher cocoa mass as opposed to cocoa butter and the other ingredients. Mm-hmm. Milk chocolate has a lot of, obviously, milk powder and sugar and that kind of thing. Like, white chocolate isn't actually a chocolate. We all know that.
It's just cocoa butter.
It's an untold secret. Yes. I mean, you can find a nice milk chocolate, for example. I think it depends on the maker and how they do it. I use one at the mansion that's it's more of a caramelly tone to it, which is nice. And you can the darker you get, you're going to get to a point where it's very dry and it's very bitter. You can get something that's just a whole cocoa mass, which is just 100% cocoa in a block, and you can use that for other things, baking and that kind of thing. I don't really go with this is baking chocolate, because you know, you can bake with whatever chocolate you like, as long as you respect the chocolate and the heat, and this is how I use it. And you can do different things with different chocolate. Like, white chocolate, I'm not a big fan of because I think it's too sweet. But I think if you use its neutral sweetness for things, it works out really well. I brought some today where I've actually taken the white chocolate and roasted it in the oven and then, you know, done something with that. So it's
what happens when you roast it?
It caramelizes like anything else. Mm-hmm. And you take that and you can make whatever you'd like with it. Like a ganache, you can retemper it and mold with it. The thing I can best equate it to, it's kind of like a dulce de leche, like a caramel. Mm-hmm. And it's really neat. You just have to, I mean, the boundaries aren't set yet. You can keep pushing them. So, chocolate can be a lot of fun.
I'm so glad you mentioned cooking the white chocolate, because I actually burnt some. And I thought, this smells really good.
Don't throw it away next time.
Like the one I think you tried earlier. I actually made the ganache and roasted the white chocolate in the oven. And, you know, it's stuff that maybe you don't think about really that much. You can't really do that with a dark because there's not enough sugar. It'll just basically burn, like a burned coffee. Mm-hmm. Let's
talk about this word temper that you brought up because let's just say me. Let's say Chris Boyd. I do not make anything sweet because I can cook things for dinner, but I've just had terrible luck with anything chocolate. But it's very important that the temperature has to be right and you get these crystals. And then if you're using a double boiler, water gets in. Talk about the tempering process. And I'll take it from any one of you that has great experience.
Tempering because chocolate is a nut. And comes from a vegetable. It is the way it works out. It's a crystal, and so tempering just means heating and cooling. And just like glass or steel, you have to heat and cool it to make it do what you want it to do. And since we like chocolate to be black or dark in color, not with white streaks, that just takes some skill to heat and cool it. And there's some classes you can take, and reading online, you can get an idea of what that means as far as heating it up, like we were talking about today. If you put chocolate out in a car today, you'll actually take it to a point where you could retemper it by just stirring it and bring it back into a nice cold room. And it's breaking down the crystal and heating that back up.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. There like Kevin said, there are certain crystals in the chocolate, and the one that produces the characteristics we want when a tempered chocolate, it contracts, it has snap, it shines, is the beta crystal that's in there.
Right.
And that's only present at certain temperatures. And then the way I temper chocolate, I think anybody can do at home. I use the microwave.
Really?
Because there's no moisture.
That's
like
right.
If you use a double boiler.
One drop gets in and
that's
you're
right.
Ruined.
You're done. Because chocolate, you know, it's mostly a solid. I mean, the only thing that you're tempering is the cocoa butter that's in it. So let's say if you get a little drop of water in there, there's a food scientist, Shirley Corraher, I think is how you pronounce her last name. She's been on, you know, numerous TV shows. She explained it as like you have a handful of sand and a little bit of fat. And then if you put a little bit of water in there, it's going to go towards the sand, and that's why it's going to seize. So I use the microwave. And, you know, you see lots of people that'll have a big marble slab and they're, you know, tabling their chocolate. I don't really have the space for that. So I use the microwave, and I use a tempering process called seeding. So I have 2/3 of whatever amount of chocolate I have, and 1/3 I add in cold. It's grated, and it seems to work fine. You just stir, and you don't have a very humid room. You should be okay. But anybody could really do that at home. The main thing, if you're trying to temper chocolate at home and you're having problems with it, don't be afraid to buy a nice amount of chocolate. And a decent chocolate, a couverture that has, you know, a certain amount of cocoa butter in it. Not the you can't go buy, you know, say like 50 Hershey bars and do that. It's going to be really hard. Because your temperature is going to go really quick. If you have maybe 1 pound of chocolate, it's going to be a lot harder than doing 5 pound.
Yeah. So if you have about 1 or 2 pounds, it's a good start.
Yeah.
And the bulk sections in Central Market and Whole Foods usually have.
Yeah.
Some couverture tablets from El Rey.
Yeah.
And Valrana,
Calibo sometimes.
Calibo.
Yeah.
And one thing I recommend when I'm teaching classes is your body has your own thermometer. 98.6 is body temperature, and that's where chocolate melts. And you can utilize that to temper chocolate.
Not with your body, but you can.
Well.
Not for public consumption.
That's right.
We're speaking this hour with Kevin Wenzel, who is a chocolatier with Wiseman House, David Collier, who is pastry chef at the Rosewood Mansion on Turtle Creek, and Adrian Newman, who is a chocolate educator and the blogger Madame Coco.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and communication start weekly in January. Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening
listening to an archive edition of Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about chocolate in honor of the DallasChocolate.org conference. With us to discuss all of this are Madame Coco, otherwise known as Adrian Newman, David Collier, who is pastry chef for the Rosewood Mansion on Turtle Creek, and Kevin Wenzel, a chocolatier who owns Wiseman House. That's in Hico, Texas?
Hico, Texas.
Excuse me. I am sorry to have gotten that wrong.
I get that all the time.
I have to ask about this. August 14th, Addison, Texas, would seem like a tough time to get all this really sensitive product where it needs to go. How is that done?
Air conditioning.
Is it shipped in dry ice? Or
I bring it up. I turn the van on, put the AC on, and start loading product. And that's a two-hour drive. But I recommend people bring an ice pack in their purse.
Yes. In my case, I travel with a cooler at all times. Mm-hmm. And with ice packs, I have a whole shelf of my freezer filled with ice packs. So at any point, if need be, I can throw one into the car. So, yeah, difficult in August. You're right.
And you do, like, chocolate tours. Is that right?
I do. I travel is another love, which is convenient when you love chocolate, too, because there's a lot of chocolate to explore out there in the world.
Is it hard? It almost seems impossible to ask this question, but do you get tired if you've gone to five chocolate shops? No? How do you keep it feeling interesting?
I will pick up a box or two of what looks lovely and taste a couple things and take things home to share. I think that's the key, because what I like, some other people might not. And so when I travel and pick up different things, I'll bring it back and see what other people think. So I try not to overindulge.
So you have in front of you, Adrian, a little jar of something. These are nibs.
Do.
Is that right?
Yes.
What's a nib?
These are cocoa nibs. And the cocoa nib, and some of you may have seen this word before in the realm of chocolate, it's the heart of the roasted cocoa bean. So I mentioned earlier about the process that happens once the chocolate maker gets the bean and roasts it. It's cracked open. It's winnowed. The skin is taken off and then it's cracked open. And the inside of that bean is called the nib. And that's actually what goes into the big conch that's ground down with sugar and whatever else you might add to it to make chocolate as we know it today. So nibs are 100% pure chocolate roasted.
Okay, can I smell it?
Yes, absolutely.
Just smell it?
I'll taste it too.
Eating them are kind of like a crunchy nut.
Yeah, so it smells exactly like opening a chocolate bar or a bag of chocolate or something.
It does, and these are nibs from one single plantation in Madagascar.
An island off of Africa.
I need to bite this. Never eaten them on the radio.
Yes.
You know what? They're more tender than I expected. I thought they would be hard like a shell.
Okay.
Crunchy. They're good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no sugar added to this at this
no,
point.
No, that is 100% chocolate.
It's
right
a lot
there.
Sweeter than I would have thought it would taste.
Well, and that has to do with this chocolate comes from a fine cocoa bean. So the flavor has really been coaxed out through the processes that happen at the farm in Madagascar, as well as through the chocolate maker roasting. He's kept in a lot of those flavors that maybe you had some, and you said sweet, but perhaps fruitiness that may have keyed on some sweet flavor.
It's brighter or more acidic than I would have thought, too.
Bright fruit and very acidic. So this bean itself is roasted at a very low temperature so that those characteristics stay in the nib itself. And that's what's so interesting about trying chocolates like this that are really cared for, that these surprising characteristics like acidity and a lemon, a citrus, a cherry, bright fruit flavors, like you mentioned, they can come out.
So does that contain what will be the cocoa solids and cocoa butter later?
That's
the
right.
The fat's still in there.
The fat is still in there. So when you crunched into these nibs, you mentioned they're a little softer than you thought they would be, and it's because the cocoa butter is inherently in there. So that's the fat that will be a part of the chocolate bar or whatever the finished product is.
Mm-hmm. Are there other uses for cocoa nibs? Do you use them?
You can throw them in, like, instead of peanut brittle, you can throw in cocoa nibs and make a brittle. Mm-hmm. Do without the peanuts and just have that all chocolatey. It's like eating a chocolate chip cookie. Or you can throw them in chocolate chip cookies without the chocolate.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been making an ice cream with them by, steeping it in the milk and the cream and then, going that way. And you get a lot of the flavor that you would expect. It's chocolate. The ice cream's vaguely chocolate, but at the same time, it's got almost a... like a bitter, acidic coffee kind of tone to it, which is really interesting. We've made caramel with them before and, you know, put them in tarts. And, yeah, we can I've ground them before and used them, you know, as a portion of the flour for a tart shell. Yeah, they're, yeah, whatever you would use a nut for, absolutely. Yeah.
So you can buy those in regular grocery stores, or do you have to order those things online?
You can buy them in a can in a lot of good grocery stores.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's Scharfenberger is the one that you can normally find at maybe like Central Market or something like that. For the nibs.
Another interesting use of these nibs that some of you may have seen recently is small breweries making beer with nibs.
Yes.
So those of you who really like the flavor of chocolate, look for some of those beers on the shelves.
That's back to the chocolate beer twice.
That's a
good
theme
day.
Going.
Yeah.
Well, since we mentioned beer, let's talk a little bit about wine, because some people really love to have some good red wine and chocolate. Is red wine the only wine that you would ever drink with chocolate?
You could, whatever you like to drink and whatever you like to eat, just put them together. I always encourage people, don't chocolate, because it melts at body temperature, 98.6, you don't want to freeze your mouth with a really cold drink because chocolate's going to melt and taste great when your mouth is warm. So stay away from a really cold one. But you know, white chocolate with
champagne,
white wine
is nice, yeah.
And then the fruitiness of really bittersweet or semi-sweet chocolates with a rich Zinfandel.
Yeah, I mean, there's some ports that you could have, you know, that are very honey, and you have that maybe with a nice quality, like caramelly milk chocolate is nice as well. I know at the mansion I was doing a dessert that was champagne and peach and white chocolate, which was like a little bit sweeter version of like a Bellini, like a drink. So, yeah. Don't limit yourself and think. I mean, it's the same with food and, you know, and wine in general. You don't always have to have white with fish and red with meat and that kind of thing. So,
but if you have a really sweet wine, then you could do any kind of chocolate. But
absolutely.
If your wine is really dry, it's going to taste even drier if your chocolate's very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the really great things about, I would imagine, working with chocolate is that you can make it taste amazing, but it also is sort of fun to make it look really pretty.
Yes.
Can you talk about that a little? You've got a box open in front of you, David. So, maybe you can talk about what's in there.
I've got it. Yeah, the thing that really attracted me to chocolate to begin with, you know, years ago, was the fact that, you know, it's always good. If you have a nice chocolate, you know it's always going to taste good. But there's this huge window of opportunity to make it look however you'd like. That's the most fun I have really at work, is making chocolates, like sort of like the ones I brought, and definitely like the ones I'll have Saturday at the Dallas Chocolate. And it's all about, you know, everybody gets worried, oh, temper this, temper that. Nice thermometer and you're in microwave and you're good. Molds are a big deal, at least, you know, if you're making, you know, something that's not like a hand-formed truffle and that kind of thing. Taking care of your molds and keeping them shiny.
Are they just silicone or plastic?
The molds that I use are polycarbonate. They're a hard plastic. Most all of them are clear. And they're actually cheaper than some molds that you'll find other places. I know they have two-piece magnetic molds that are maybe like $50 a mold, $40 a mold. All the polycarb molds that I use are around $20-some. So it's a very small investment. And as long as you take care of them, I have molds I've had for 10, 12 years. And I use colored cocoa butters, which is just a fat-soluble color that's been added to the cocoa butter. And as long as you respect its temp, I keep them all under 40 Celsius. I know it's strange, but I'm very metric, especially here in Dallas. But,
so colored chocolate is always basically white chocolate?
It's just all the colors that I use are just the cocoa butter with a color in them, color added to them. And these I've got, I brought today, I have a couple that are white and a few that are dark. And
tell her about the flavors.
Yes,
so
I'm lucky because being there at the mansion, I'm not, our business isn't solely dependent on my chocolate output, which is, I'm not like Kevin, you know, so I can play around a little bit more.
Well, and you're also at a place where people are willing to pay a lot for something
well,
beautiful.
Yes, thank you to everyone. And, you know, lots of them that I make are giveaways for VIPs and that kind of thing. So I can kind of stretch my legs creatively and make some different flavors. Like today I brought a one that's a strawberry balsamic vinegar. I brought one that's a fleur de sel caramel. So it's a salted caramel. I have one that's raspberry and rose. I have one that's peanut butter and jelly. I have one that's buttered popcorn. And one that's a cannelé, like a little French cake that I actually took the cream, took the liquid portion of the ganache and steeped the cakes in it and pureed it in the blender, strained that out, and then made the ganache with that. That's the one that has the roasted white chocolate in it.
Yummy.
So, yeah, wow. Please enjoy. There's what? More chewing on air.
I may hold off till the break on those.
Lucky.
Why is salt so good with chocolate? I have to tell you, like, and I know I shouldn't say this to this crowd, but like a chocolate-covered pretzel to me is one of the most delicious combinations mm-hmm. of flavors in the world.
No, I really, really love salt. And I think that's a lot of pastry people love salt. Like a lot of savory people want something sweet all day. Salt really balances out chocolate, and it also opens up your palate to taste more of the chocolate, I think. Like a salty caramel with a chocolate is just, it's right there. That's awesome. I have the blog that's there for the hotel there on Mansion. I have a recipe for a salted, like a chocolate cookie, which is really, I think I wrote the blog as the greatest cookie ever. And it's salt and chocolate are really meant to go together, I think. And feel free to, you know.
I think sometimes the salt can kind of just do the balancing act of the sweetness and the astringency of the chocolate and or the caramels being kind of sweet, mm-hmm. a little caramel in there. We do a con caramel cluster with sea salt and fortisal and with the caramel, it's just real nice. And a lot of people don't know it's there until they are really eating it, but have a lot of it. But it's
And another balance to that would be to try something savory that's salty. So, for instance, doing a chocolate and cheese pairing is a really great thing to do. So we were talking about wine earlier with chocolate, and really just try what you like together. Well, I would say do the same thing with cheese, and you'll really be surprised.
Like a hard cheese? Or
a hard cheese, mm-hmm. a soft cheese. I've done many. And just to have fun with it. Try that, you know, at the saltiness level that you like in a cheese and pair it with a nice dark or milk chocolate for that matter. The sweetness, the sugar, the cream, they come together in interesting ways. You'll be surprised.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak first on the phones to Navi in Dallas. Hi, Navi.
Hello. Good afternoon to everyone.
Hello.
Interesting topic. Thanks very much.
Sure.
My question is why European chocolates are more famous or better, less sugary? And even you guys, when you go to Europe, you bring some souvenir. First thing to say, chocolate from Germany or from Switzerland. And American chocolate then is much sweeter and not really as high quality as European. And it's cheaper in a way.
I have an opinion on that, and mm-hmm. that's just simply whenever we travel, we're not looking – when we go traveling, we don't look for drugstores or grocery stores to do our shopping. We go to the finest little chocolate shops, yeah. and we only go to the big cities. We don't go to the little country towns, and so – it's only the big cities that really can support a nice, fine chocolate. And so the tourists kind of run there. That's where they travel. And so that's their experience. And
so we can find that here is what you're saying.
We can find that here.
Absolutely.
Just like someone was saying earlier, you know, you can get a Hershey bar for $1 or you can buy some of the finest chocolate in the world for $5. So just a few more dollars more and you'll be able to see some of that at the Addison Conference Center this weekend. But it's that experience. When I do little classes, I talk about chocolate history, and there was one European that had the first chocolate, and his name was Cortez. And whenever he visited, when he conquered Montezuma.
Hernan Cortez, the explorer. Yeah.
Exactly. And because of his experience and all his experience leading up to that, because his food on the ship was not very tasty. But then he got this bowl of rich chocolate drink that he was drinking and that was presented by, and he was floored by it because of all the flavor. You can imagine a nice hot drink, not sweet, but just full of flavor, spices. And because his experience, he thought, I'm going to take this back to the queen and the king. And so that's why chocolate, if he hadn't tasted that and had a good experience, then he would never have taken that back to Europe.
Talk about drinking chocolate. This is not Swiss Miss that you guys are talking about. Am I right?
Right. It's just pure chocolate.
How does that work? Just melt. It's not just melted chocolate.
It is melted chocolate. And whenever we make our chocolate, it's I blend and shave and grind chocolate. And I blend those together in such a way that it's a nice, rich drink. And I, I just use boiling water and melt the chocolate with boiling water and whisk it together. And so whenever you're drinking it, you get the full flavor of the chocolate. Some people add milk, and that can kind of reduce the flavor of the chocolate because of all the milk fat in it.
Mm-hmm.
And plus you're using really good chocolate, and you're kind of cheapening it down with milk. But to get the flavor of the chocolate, just drink it like that.
So what's the right temperature for that?
Where it doesn't burn your tongue.
Yes. Thank you.
Put your finger in there, and if it's not too hot, you can drink it out.
There's body temperature once again.
Yeah. Growing up, I had so much bad chocolate that when they say don't drink it because it's hot, but you're cold, you want this hot cocoa, and then it burns your tongue. And so I wanted chocolate that you know was good at. But when you put boiling water with chocolate, there's usually enough chocolate there to reduce the temperature of the boiling water. And so it's really great drinking temperature as soon as you mix it. And I will have some of that too at the Saturday conference.
And Kevin's drinking chocolate is amazing. I tried it last year for the first time. It's incredible.
Thank you very much.
By the way, Adrian, I love reading on your blog that you were basically raised in the back of a Dairy Queen. You have a soft spot for that sort of like
that's right.
mass-produced sort of melted chocolate on
I do.
Stick.
I do, as a matter of fact. So even though I've probably tasted some of the best, in my opinion, chocolates in the world, a dip cone now and again from the drive-thru at Dairy Queen is always a go-to.
Yeah, I have nostalgia.
I have a big thing with, it's a cheap and guilty pleasure. But, yeah, things like that are still great, even from, you know, that you remember from childhood. So
it's about the experience sometimes.
Exactly.
Is what it is,
exactly.
Yeah. We all grow up, though.
We are speaking to Adrian Newman, David Collier, and Kevin Wenzel. We'll resume our conversation about chocolate in honor of the DallasChocolate.org conference.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults. Short courses in the arts, writing, languages, history, and communication start weekly in January. Details at smu.edu/think.
Listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are chocolatier Kevin Wenzel of Wiseman House in Hyco, Texas, David Collier, who is pastry chef at the Rosewood Mansion on Turtle Creek, and chocolate educator and blogger Adrian Newman, a.k.a. Madam Coco. We have an email here from Jerry, and I think you guys are about to make Jerry's day.
Yes.
Jerry says, is cocoa butter a dairy product? I cannot have milk, cheese, butter, etc., and love chocolate, but have never received an answer to this question.
Absolutely not.
It's from the seed.
Yeah, it's the
no
same
dairy
as saying peanut oil.
In cocoa butter.
No dairy at all. Yeah, so, totally safe. Enjoy, Jerry.
Just don't eat milk chocolate.
Yes.
If you're dairy allergic, just do the dark.
Let's go to the phones now. This time we will speak with Chris in Dallas. Hi, Chris.
Hey, great show. I just wanted to say I had running with cancer a little while ago and doing research like holistically to find foods that help out. I found that like dark chocolate was awesome for the body.
Right.
And one of my favorite desserts now is just a couple pieces of like Lindt 90% dark chocolate and some almonds. And it tastes so good, but it's also like pretty healthy for the body. I'm wondering what y'all thought about that.
Thanks for your call.
I've read that too, and I've heard that. And just to get, I think, I don't know what the best amount is to eat every day, but.
A lot.
It's got so many good things about it, antioxidants, polyphenols, and all the good stuff of green tea, red wine. And I've read other research, too. Did you have stomach cancer?
Let me see if we can get Chris back on.
Okay.
It was a sarcoma tumor.
Are you doing okay now, Chris?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah,
I'm glad to hear.
It's been about a year and a half, so.
Okay.
It's working.
Maybe the chocolate is working. That's
Well, the green tea and the red wine also is. You just like you feel like your body just kind of relaxes or something.
You bet.
It does.
Really
nice. Great to hear.
The endorphins, it releases the endorphins, and so that's just another added bonus of it just also making you feel really good.
It is interesting, you know, when you're talking about quantity, we're all joking about this, but I've noticed a huge difference in if you have a really good box of chocolates, you can have one or maybe two, and you're really okay.
Yes.
As opposed to wanting to eat a lot more of something that is not as flavorful. And that has surprised me because I really like to eat.
Yeah, cheaper chocolate's got more flavor.
Well,
I mean,
less flavor. But... Yeah, absolutely.
And
that's what I just said.
That's exactly right.
Good chocolate.
All of that strength that's in the flavor can really come out because it's not masked by other fats or sugar. And that's really the problem. A lot of chocolate I grew up on and most of us did, that craving that we would feel, and even I do feel sometimes still today, is the craving for the fat and the sugar. And it's really the flavor itself that once you have that one piece, you'll feel great and you won't have had those bad components
of
sugar and fat that's not necessary to make you feel good.
Yeah, I think it's similar to like when going back to coffee, you know, you couldn't have a 1 ounce shot of McDonald's coffee and feel okay. But if you can have a 1 ounce shot of, say, espresso, you're fine. And I think there's some parallels there, definitely.
This rarely happens in a lot of American homes, but if you get some chocolate, how long can you keep it and where should you keep it until it's not so good anymore?
Just keep it cool. Mm-hmm. If you're cool.
Refrigerator or is that too cold?
Refrigerators kind of trap all the flavors and those flavors kind of go into your chocolate. But if if you have a wine cellar or a wine cabinet, that's a great place.
Perfect.
Because it's keeping it away from other flavors.
So like 60 degrees?
68 degrees. Mm-hmm. If you have a cool place in the house that you can hide it, then that's a good place.
Yeah, I think, dark chocolate, usually, if it's well-tempered and everything, it'll keep for about 12 months. I think you're fine for a year. Milk and white chocolate, since they have other additives to them that could, go rancid, maybe 6 to 8 months.
Airtight container?
Well, yeah, that would be the best. I would avoid the fridge. Because not only is the fridge going to trap all the flavors, like Kevin said, it's also going to trap a lot of moisture. The fridge is the most humid place in your house. It may be shocking here in Dallas, but the fridge is the most humid place. And the moisture in there is going to leach the sugar out of the chocolate. And you're going to have what's called sugar bloom. Like if you've ever put a candy bar in the fridge and it's sticky when you come back, that's the sugar coming out of the chocolate. So, yeah, avoid the fridge. Like a wine cabinet would be perfect or something. Maybe, yeah. That would be, yeah.
But in Texas, if you only have the fridge to keep it cold, find something airtight and
keep
that moisture out.
Let's go next on the phones to Michael in Dallas. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how's it going?
Great, thank you.
Good. This question's along the lines of the salt and chocolate combination, but it's more about like spiciness that can go along with chocolate. I love that combination. I was wondering how that works. I mean, why does that taste good?
I think since you have the sweetness of the chocolate, that blends really well with heat. It cuts some of the heat, and they blend really well. There's one kind of chocolate that comes already spiced. It's called Chocopili. It's from Valrhona. It has curry and chili powder and that kind of thing, and it's really neat. It's really tasty. But I mean, you can certainly do that on your own. You know, if you're going to make a chili truffle, I know Kevin makes lots of spicy things, lots of them. You can steep your cream with that if you're going to make a truffle or a ganache. Spice and chocolate have been around as long as chocolate, probably with a mole, since we're down here in the Southwest.
Right.
I think the heat and the sweet go really well together.
We do one called the Love Potion. Mm-hmm. It has chipotle ancho pepper in it. A little touch of cinnamon to kind of balance and make it familiar to people. But just steep it. Go a little. You can always get hotter. You can always get richer. Go a little at a time. And then just like making a tea with water, you heat up your cream, add your spice, and let it steep. And then you can strain it out through something real that would catch all the spice so you don't have a grainy texture in your mouth.
I'm curious, Kevin, about the store. Do you have people just sort of hanging out, bewildered, can't make a choice? I walked into a chocolate store one time. It was beautiful, and I walked out without getting anything because there were too many choices.
That's what we try to do recently is reduce all the difficulty choices and just keep it simple so that they can see what we're about, and that's chocolate. And what's really important to us is making chocolate approachable, making it a luxury, affordable chocolate.
And Chris, you're not alone in that. I end up doing impromptu tours of the chocolate aisle at Whole Foods or Central Market just because people stand there and just look and they don't know what to buy.
My husband
walk
still
away.
Teases me. It was an early date.
Because there's a lot out there and some of it's mediocre, but a lot of it's really, really good. And ask questions, look at labels, look at the ingredients. If you're looking at a chocolate bar or if you're buying confections, you know, understand where they're coming from and what's in them. Make sure there aren't added fats. Cocoa butter is the fat that is inherent in the bean.
What else might be in there?
Fat.
Like
vegetable
margarine
oil?
Kind of stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. Stay away from vegetable oil. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if it says cocoa butter, that's a good chocolate. So start there.
Exactly.
Sugar, cocoa butter, cocoa beans, or some people might call it chocolate mass or chocolate liquor. Liquor meaning not alcohol, but the essence of chocolate. And that's really the only ingredients that should be in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Very few ingredients. Count them on one hand.
Yes.
So that's a good sign if you recognize the names of everything.
Absolutely.
I think the you know, that's why Saturday is going to be such a great thing. I mean, it's only $15 for adults. And, you know, not only are we there, but there's tons of other people there, and you can try everything. And, you know, you won't be confused next time you go someplace. You go, oh, I had this dark chocolate with this last time. Then this, you know, it's really opening the door to everybody here in Dallas and with the burgeoning chocolate scene. So,
We want to invigorate the Dallas chocolate scene.
Let's go back to the phones now. And this time we'll speak with Hugh in Dallas. Hi, Hugh.
Hey. Hello. I have a question about Kevin's toffee. And it's absolutely incredible. I want to know how he makes it and tell us a little bit about it. It's not exactly a coffee question, but... hopefully you'll be able to tell us about it.
Sure. I start off with real butter and real good Belgian chocolate and California almonds. And I dry roast the almonds. And so it's got more flavor, so I'm not taking any flavor away. And then I'm putting the butter and the sugar, cooking it up in a copper kettle and throwing it on a big marble slab. And that marble slab takes the heat out real quick, and so it makes it nice crispy so it won't stick in your teeth. And we'll have samples of that on Saturday, too.
Excellent.
How do you remember what you've tasted? If you go somewhere and it's not your own product and you have something amazing, I'm sure not everyone will share recipes. How do you figure out what's in something and go home and play with it and try to reproduce it?
Personally, for me, I mean, sometimes if they – I guess, you know, I'm lucky. I'm sure, you know, Kevin and Adrian have run into this too, that, you know, if you tell them who you are or that you're in the industry, they're a little more giving. You'll run into a lot of people that, you know, their recipes are locked in a box and, you know, that's it. And that's where really your palate's going to come in. You're going to be able to figure something out texture-wise, flavor-wise, pick up on things. And it's also fun. I mean, that's really part of the enjoyable part for me is, wow, I had that and it was really good. I wonder what I could do with that. And, I mean, the industry's really open in a lot of ways. I mean, it's kind of a 50-50 split between people that are sharing and people that aren't. But that's where the fun comes in, is trying to taste something. Let's say, you know, someone would come Saturday and taste something and go home and go, well, I had this thing and it was toffee, or I had this thing and it was buttered popcorn, and I wonder what I can do at home.
Yeah.
And that, you know, because it's supposed to be fun. I mean, dessert and chocolate and like Kevin said, is a luxury item. And, you know, people, let's say when they come to dinner at the mansion, they don't have to have dessert. So they're having dessert because they want to have fun. Mm-hmm. And that's how I've always looked at it. And that's really what drove me and, you know, pulled me towards pastry in the beginning. So, yeah.
I come just for dessert.
Yeah, well, yes, please. Yes. We have lots of those too. So I wave and meet them. So that's good.
Adrian, people can check out your blog if they want to learn more. They can go to Madame Coco at Blogspot. But is there a book or a sort of a primer for people who really want to take this seriously and start to educate themselves?
I'd say the best thing to do is start tasting on your own. There are some great books to read. The one that got me just understanding the world of chocolate was The True History of Chocolate by Dr. Coe. But trust your palate. Look at ingredients and just start tasting and understanding where this chocolate's coming from, who's making it. One of our questions from a caller earlier was the difference in European and American chocolates. Try them both. Try them all. But
more than once.
More than once. It takes a long time to really start understanding the complexities of it. Very much like wine, you can start really grasping these flavors that are coming out in the chocolate. Play with it, taste, and see where you get.
We have time for one more call. This time we'll speak with Jim in Dallas. Hey, Jim.
Ooh, I feel lucky. you know, one of the greatest disappointments of my life was when I found out that snow cones and chocolate don't mix. That just was devastating. But I read a very fine article in New Yorker several years ago about chocolatiers and about the whole world of it. And I was wondering if you could speak just a second about the metrics of the quality of chocolate, how you measure this. Now, thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Wow. But he said metric, so I'll speak. Yeah, you speak. I'll go into that one. I personally, as far as, you know, measuring chocolate and measuring ingredients and that kind of thing, I use metric because it's more precise for me. I can take a recipe, let's say, you know, a ganache is 600 grams of cream and 464 grams of chocolate and 80 grams of butter and 80 grams of blah, blah, blah. But and if I need to make 20 times that, that's easy. I just, you know, times 20. It's far more difficult for me to do pinch, scosh, ounce, teaspoon, tablespoon. It's just the way I learned, and it seems to make so much more sense. It's so much more logical for me to use the metric system. And there's still some kind of, you know, hocus-pocus voodoo with the tablespoons and teaspoons for me. I have someone who actually works in the shop for me, and I'll just hand them a recipe like that and say, please make this metric. And then they'll give that back to me, and I appreciate it because they'll go, why is this 3 teaspoons? It says 1 tablespoon. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot that in grade school. So, yeah, I hope that helps. Yes?
I was going to say there's you had mentioned something about the quality of chocolate. Or how would you grade your own flavors? And it's really just get in there and try some of the best. And just start developing your own palate and just tasting it. At the Weisenhaus, we get a lot of samples in when we ask for samples, and we just start tasting a lot of chocolate. And some of it is great for making confections. Some of it is just good for eating. And
on top of that, Kevin, I would say a lot of the bars you'll see right now, pure chocolate bars that are out in your grocery stores, have a percentage on
right.
them. And if you're seeing that, again, like Kevin said, start trying them to know what that percentage means to you. Because in some cases, a 65% from one maker will taste very different.
Yeah,
that's
from
a 65% from another, yeah. Because there's differences in the beans and the roasting temperatures and the amount of cocoa butter that's added to it. So try them out. Again, it just all goes back to what you like and what you're able to try.
That's right.
The DallasChocolate.org Chocolate Conference takes place Saturday, August 14th at the Addison Conference Center. We have been speaking this hour with blogger Adrian Newman, a.k.a. Madame Coco, David Collier, who's pastry chef at the Rosewood Mansion on Turtle Creek, and Kevin Wenzel, chocolatier at Wiseman House. It's been a pleasure to have all of you here.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
And
thanks,
now you
Chris.
Can taste some of this almond toffee.
Yes, absolutely. Start chewing.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.